Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. Joined once again by the reliable Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, I'm the only one who seems to make it every week, but glad to be here. I'll be here again next week, I'm sure. You can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45.
Yeah, you're like the Alessio Romagnoli of this podcast, because I saw a stat today that he's one of only 13 players in Serie A who has appeared in all 21 games so far, like every minute. So that's 1,890 minutes in a row of action. And of course, he played in the Coppa, and he's scheduled to play in the Coppa tomorrow. So that will be...
How many minutes was it? You said 1,891?
Yeah, it's just 21 times 90.
Okay,
so... In actual fact, it's more because of the added time and stuff.
Yeah. We should play him in this Cup game for 8 minutes and then sub him off for the rest of the season. So he only plays 1,899.
That would be sick. That would be
sick. It'd be a terrible decision.
I was thinking, is it something to do with 69? But I'm glad you went down that route. But speaking of special tributes, we'll come into the Torino preview. But obviously tomorrow, I'm glad to see that the club will be recognizing celebrating the life of Kobe Bryant. Obviously, died in a tragic helicopter accident. In Los Angeles, Calabasas. I'm not sure how close it is actually to LA, but obviously he takes helicopter flights from there to downtown LA, I think. So, that was awful news. Obviously, rest in peace to him, to his daughter. That was, you know, just as tragic, if not more. And to everyone who was on board. Obviously, he was a boyhood Milanista, grew up in Italy. Always been a fan of the club and has been very vocal about it. You know, he's been on several visits to Milanello to visit the team, to visit the directors. It's just really sad, man. It's just really, really sad.
It is. You know, the even if you weren't like a basketball fan, the impact he had on that sport specifically, but in sports in general, is massive. I mean, there's very few people in the world that I think wouldn't know the name Kobe Bryant. You think of the three most transcending basketball players of all time. Everyone's heard of Michael Jordan. Everyone's heard of LeBron James. And everyone's heard of Kobe Bryant. So to have one of them pass, you know, it really is, at least in my lifetime, that I could remember the first huge athlete death. You know, I was trying to think of other athletes that have passed, and I can't think of any that were in situations like this, you know. Mm-hmm. It hits everyone a different way. A lot of kids lost an idol. It's just really sad. You know, there's very few positives to take out of it. It's nice to see every community coming together and showing support for the families of not just Kobe Bryant's family, but the families of the other lives that were lost. You know, there were 9 people on that helicopter, it's tragic, but our hearts go out to them, and you know, it'll be missed dearly.
Yeah, 100%. It's one of those things, as you say. I think his presence sort of transcended the sport. He was also hugely successful away from basketball as a businessman, and obviously he's got an Academy Award as well. It's just like when we were growing up in school, however many thousands of miles away it is over here, whenever we scrunched up a bit of paper and shot for the trash can in the corner, it was always Kobe, you know what I mean? And that was it. And he was the first ever basketball jersey that I owned. It was a Lakers one with them. I think it was an old one, so it had number 8 on. And then I also got another one with 24 on. But yeah, just a huge, huge personality. As we say, a Milan fan, which I guess just makes it resonate a little bit more within that particular community. And hopefully the team basically give him a tribute tomorrow on Tuesday. They will be doing a tribute before the game. There'll be a minute silence, I believe. And also the team will play with black armbands on. Obviously in recognition of his links to the club. And I've also seen that Milan News are trying to get a campaign going where there's a minute's applause in the 24th minute, which I think in moments like this, moment, a minute's silence is correct. I would normally say if somebody passes under normal, I say normal circumstances, then, you know, a minute's applause is the right way to celebrate someone's life. But when it's a tragic circumstance, I still think a minute's silence is the right thing. But then also to have a minute's applause in the 24th minute will also be really good. So, yeah, we'll hope that the team give him the best possible tribute out there on the field and we get to the semi-final, but we'll come on to that game in a bit. Friday night started off the weekend pretty well, I guess. It feels like ages. We said this last week, but it feels like ages since we played on a Friday night. And I feel like that because it seems like a while since we won on a Friday night, and then I didn't feel as bad about Huddersfield losing on a Saturday. But Brescia, it's never... I mean, we haven't played them for a while. They've not been in the top flight for a while. But it's never something that strikes me as an easy trip for any team. Like, they've got a really close-in stadium. Just as an aside, there's a Coppa 90 documentary that's come out. It's the Derby Days one. It's about Brescia v Atalanta. I had no idea really how fierce the rivalry was, but if you get a spare 50 minutes, I think it is, go and watch that. Incredible. Obviously, Brescia are twinned with Milan Ultras as well, so... I think there's a bit of an affinity there, really. But after a scrappy opening, 60 minutes or so, Ante Rebic decided he was going to be the hero again.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of that was him deciding it or just being in the right place, because it was quite the cluster of a goal there. You know, obviously, it was a great pass out to Zlatan, a great cross in to who was supposed to be Casillejo. I think he got like one touch and then... the keeper dove out for it, but didn't get a hold on it. He deflected it to another Brescia player who then deflected it back to Castillejo, but couldn't get a good hold. And then it went to Rebic, who then just said, screw it, someone got out of shoot. And he did. And that's all she wrote, you know. But it was a scrappy, scrappy game. The first half was pretty appalling, to be honest with you. I think three of our four defenders had a yellow card going into halftime of Conti, Teo, and Simon.
Simon. Big yeah. Sigh, yeah.
Of course, Romagnoli, the old reliable there, the only one to not get a yellow card. But yeah, it was fun. I will say this was probably Zlatan's worst match in his return to Milan, but it's okay. You know, you're going to have bad games, and I think just the overall presence of him, obviously he created the assist, so that was crucial there, but just the presence of him has raised everyone else's game so much, and we've seen it since his arrival here. So, you know, I'll let that slide a little bit, but I do think it's fair to recognize that it wasn't the best game from him, but that's okay, because Rebic was the hero again.
Yeah, I'm buzzing for him. You know, I won't pretend that I'm one of those guys who's been like, oh, I'm, you know, Rebic is going to be amazing, just stick with him. You know, I think criticism that's been leveled at him has been right, because Pioli has hinted in what he said in the media that his attitude before Christmas wasn't really right. And then it seemed to coincide with the time when the Eintracht sporting director, I think it is, I want to say Freddy Bobic, I think he's called, came out and said, oh, there's no chance of him coming back this month. It seemed to coincide with that all of a sudden he gets his shot in the copper. Against Spal, was a bit rusty in that game, sort of showed, you know, his first touch wasn't quite there and stuff like that. But then that performance against Udinese felt like a breakout for him in terms of his confidence. And then 93rd minute winner in that game, 72nd minute winner in the game against Brescia, which is obviously massive for him as well. I'm going to be interested to see what happens between now and the next game, the game against Hayas, probably between now and the derby, because I don't think Rafael Leao's spot is nailed down anymore. I mean, you said about Ibrahimovic having probably his worst game in a Milan shirt since his return. I would agree with that. I don't think he looked... I don't know. I don't think he looked 100%. You know, he was still the fastest player on the pitch. He hit the top speed of any player on the pitch, which is remarkable, really. But just... stuff like the ball across from Teo from 6 yards out, he somehow managed to put that wide. That was just something that you could easily mistake for Nikola Kalinic.
I noticed he had a lot of heavy touches as well, and that's abnormal for him.
He's getting
most
a rest.
Most of his touches were bad. Yeah,
tomorrow night.
Definitely.
But I read something today in Corriere della Sera, I think it was, that basically said Pioli's already thinking about going forward with an Ibra Rebic front two rather than an Ibra Leao. Yeah, what do you think about Leao? I mean, the early signs were good, but...
And then it was kind of frustrating after that. And then they were good again when Zlatan returned. So now they've dipped again. It's up and down. He's young. He's immature. We've said it 100 times on the show. I think his time's coming, but there's no reason to rush him. And I think the more rotation he gets is actually going to be better for him than just playing 90 minutes every game and, you know, hoping for the best, trying to be a hero. I think it's good to have some competition there, good to give him the rest and be able to watch other established professionals do their work and learn from them. And I think that's great, something that we'll see from Rebic.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Again, I think the key point to reiterate with Rafael Leao is that he is so young. And ultimately, if he was the finished product at the age of 20, he probably wouldn't be with us. He'd probably be at Barcelona now because there's rumours that they've been sniffing around and they were while he was at Lille. And he wouldn't have cost us only 28 million euros. He would have cost us a lot more if he was doing everything right every single game. So we got to stick with him. He's raw. He'll be learning from Ibra. You know, the bond off the pitch is important as it is on the pitch, in my opinion, in that. And it'll be good to have a little bit of competition as well. You know, nobody walking into their place in the team, Ibra aside. So, yeah, see how that one goes. One thing I will say is that we've spoken about and we've praised, I would say, for the most part, the 4-4-2 that Pioli's decided to implement, switch to it ahead of the game against Cagliari, wasn't it, I think? And it's seen us change because we now look like we actually have some kind of direction to our attacks. We have two focal points as opposed to one. We're not relying as much on playing through the wingers who were incredibly predictable. It just made us look a lot better. One thing I've always said, though, is that we will eventually get overrun with that midfield pairing against teams with a better midfield. And all it took, especially early in that second half against Brescia, was Sandro Tonali to basically start turning the screws. And we were so on the back foot. We should have conceded twice, maybe three times, but for Donnarumma's heroics. As much as we should be happy with grinding out 3 points like that, we should also look at passages of play like that against a team that is really, really struggling. You know, they're in the bottom three and have been for weeks and weeks now. We shouldn't be getting run all over the pitch like that. And I think that's just it's the first sign that something could go majorly wrong with the 4-4-2.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when we start playing the bigger clubs that are well established in their midfield game and how they move forward and break down teams, I think we're really going to see struggles. And like you said, you saw it against Brescia because of one good player. Now have that same situation going up against a team like Inter, like Napoli. Napoli too. Like Juve, all the big teams right now. And we're going to see some serious trouble. And, you know, with as great as Donnarumma is, he can't save us from everything. And eventually it's going to catch up to us. So we definitely got to figure that out. It seems like it's been our problem, the midfield, since the 2013-14 season. I can't remember the last time we had a midfield that didn't have holes in it, but it's going to be dangerous for us. I don't know. When do you think it's going to start collapsing? Do you think it will?
I'm worried particularly about that game against Inter because they've got that on the, you know, when you've got the calendar up on the wall, that's the one that we're circling in red pen at the moment as the one that, let's say we beat Torino. You know, they got spanked by Atalanta 7-0, get into the cup. Hopefully we beat Hellas Verona. They're having a little bit of an upturn, though. They're not a terrible side. But let's say we do the business and beat those two going into the derby. That's going to be a massive litmus test for us in terms of where we're actually at. Because we've had a favourable run of fixtures, just like we did at the start of the season. So that'll be a thing like, right, where do we stack up against a team that's actually competing in this league and is, you know, they're asserted in the top four now. And I worry that Conte's game is so dependent on midfield superiority. We saw it in that first game against Inter early in the season when, I say, if we'd have won, we'd have actually gone, well, we'd have gone level on points with them at that point. Obviously, they play like a 3-4-1-2 or like a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-2-1, basically lots of different combinations of playing a three-man defense with wing backs and packing out the midfield. And I worry if all we have to go up against that, a team that doesn't play with that much width, only plays with wing backs rather than natural wingers, that we've got four players down the sides and only two players sat in front of the back four. That to me is just like a recipe for disaster. So I wouldn't be surprised if we are working on other systems, because it seems to me that the times that we've had problems massively this season has been against teams that play three at the back and pack the midfield. Like Atalanta, we got absolutely demolished 5-0, and it was through a similar method. They just cut through the thirds and we didn't have an answer for it. Obviously, we were playing a different system then as well, but I just think there is that little bit of something in us that is vulnerable against teams who play three-man defences. Udinese did the same, interestingly, and they gave us a good game.
Yeah, definitely they did. I think there's little glimpses of something that Pioli's kind of implementing for the future. And I do think at some point we might switch to a 3-5-2 formation. Just the way I saw Bennacer played wider in this last game against Brescia. Obviously, it didn't work out too well for the first half there. But I've noticed that the way the defenders are and the fact that our fullbacks are so attacking-oriented, a part of me really thinks that we're going to be moving to a situation like that in the future. And it could just be signing that next midfield player or sign another center back. I know we've been linked to a plethora of both positions, but I think that's something Pioli wants. I could be completely off base here, but I don't know. It just seems like that's the route he wants to go. That seems to be a style that's really dominating Italian football right now. And why would you not, you know, join the bandwagon there?
Yeah, I saw a report, and we definitely mentioned it on here. It was one from Sky, who, when it comes to stuff like you know, the probable 11s and stuff like that, and actual tactics, formation stuff, say what you want about the transfer rumour, but in terms of their actual analysis, seem to be pretty good. They seem to think that Pioli, Maldini and Boban all agree that Bennacer is actually more of a box-to-box midfielder, and that they're wanting to sign a defensive midfielder, a regista, whatever you want to call them, to sit in front of that back four and just provide a bit more protection, and then possibly switch to playing a different formation, which I think makes sense to me. Bennacer has not been told to sit back from what I've seen. Whenever he wins the ball, he tends to go charging forward, and he beats his man most of the time. Like, there was that stat about him having however many completed dribbles last season. We're already seeing it this season. His agility and his quick turn and his low centre of gravity allows him to beat players, and I don't think we should restrict that by any means. Perhaps you could argue a 4-4-2 is perfect for that, because he's in a role there alongside somebody else, and with a player like Teo just over his left shoulder, and a midfielder like Hakan or Bonaventura, who maybe likes to tuck in a bit more. You could argue it's ideal for him as the 4-4-2, but I also just think that whenever you've got two players in Bennacer and Kessier, that's the pairing that's been used the most. Two players like that who... we've seen attacking tendencies. I don't know. I'm just worried about work rates and all that kind of thing. We got a question, and this made me think, actually. I always tend to start overthinking formations and stuff when we get questions like this. But Teo Diplas asks, what would you say to a Bennacer-Paqueta duo in a diamond midfield 4-4-2 formation? So I assume what he's saying there is Bennacer to be the deeper one and Paqueta to be the attacking midfielder. And then you got two men either side. Is that a solution?
I've always been a fan of the diamond midfield. That's something that I personally enjoy. I don't know. A lot of people are questionable about it, because it really does leave the midfield, like the center midfield section, a bit weaker, because they just have the two there. But I think, I don't know, because you're right. Bennacer does do better as a box-to-box going forward. So if we sign someone for that defensive midfield position and throw Bennacer in the left center mid there, it's not a bad idea. That Florentino guy, that'd be cool, I guess. I don't really know much about him, but I'm all for Paqueta in an attacking midfielder role. I think that's been, you know, pretty well publicized, and I'm a big fan of him, and I like him in the middle there. But yeah, I like the formation. I think it could work, so I don't have any problems with it.
I mean, we might as well mention it now. There's been some talk... and by some talk, this has been potentially the weirdest rumour of January so far, because Sky came out and said something, I believe it was on Friday, about how there'd been rumours, Sky said there'd been rumours of a Paqueta-Bernardeschi swap with Milan and Juve, but those have been denied. That's what Sky said. And I was thinking to myself, that's the first time I've heard that rumour. Mm-hmm. I've not heard that rumour, and yet the clubs have already denied something that's not even widespread in the press. And then what's come out over the weekend and today, apparently it is an option now. And it's something that is being discussed. So is that another, you know, we talk about the takeover and it's like denial's being as good as confirmation.
Right.
It's like they maybe saw one thing and thought we need to move to deny this before it gets out there. And now it seems to be, I mean, I would love, I'm always wary, as most Milan fans will be now, about doing business with Juve, because over the last five or so deals, we've come off worse. However, treat each one isolated. Maldini and Boban haven't dealt with Juve yet. Trust them until they F one up, basically. That's my stance on it. Paqueta to us at the moment, and this sounds harsh, and I don't mean it in an insensitive way, but he's a useless asset. He doesn't want to be he doesn't want to be here. You know, he's not in the right mindset, and that's bad. You know, there's no two ways about it. Footballers, this sounds weird, but footballers are people too, and sometimes they don't settle on the pitch, which affects off the pitch, or vice versa. I think for Paqueta, you know, he's uprooted his life when he was 21 years old. He's come over here, settled really well under Gattuso, probably felt very appreciated and wanted, and then the last two coaches have made him feel a bit alienated. And then you combine that with all the stuff about him suffering from stress because things aren't great away from them. It just feels like it's heading towards him getting a fresh start somewhere else, which is a huge shame because we made an investment on him, looking at it from the business point of view. But also, he's someone that I feel like for the first few months, the fan base really, really bought into. And every 11 that you saw, people's ideal 11, he was in it. And now here we are in a position where we're certainly not going to play in a central midfield pairing alongside Kessié or Bennacer. He's not going to play out as a wide midfielder. He's not going to play as a striker. Or maybe he could play as a support striker. I really don't know, but I doubt it. So it doesn't seem like there's a role for him. And Teo's question, he says a player, he doesn't want Paqueta to leave the club. A player who can play for the Brazilian national team can play for Milan, and it's up to Pioli to find a way to use him. I agree with that, but maybe Pioli has tried that. He's tried things in training, and he just can't really get things to click. And now, you know, you've got the whole thing of Paqueta declaring himself unavailable to face Brescia. I mean, first of all, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm torn because obviously we don't know everything that's going on. We don't know the personal aspect of it, and that's clearly where the issues lie. I don't think it's performance-based. I mean, he was never starting that game, but he absolutely would have been on the bench. He's been subbed on multiple times before. But that said, I mean, it's not professional to request to be sat out, and it's your job. You know, I don't get to tell my boss, hey, I'm not really feeling it today. Cool if I just don't work, you know, like that's.
And you're also not paid $2.5 million a year.
Exactly. Now, granted, I understand that there is a sporting aspect to that too, that if a player's not in the right frame of mind, if they're not feeling too well, they're not going to perform well, and it's better to put someone who's fully fit and ready. So I do understand it from that point of view. But to not travel with the team even is a bit strange. You know, you want to be there to support your coworkers, your friends, teammates. Which brings me to the next part, is that he claims to not really have friends besides Piontek, who, as we all know, is also on the out and out and is maybe moving towards an exit. So I think it really is a mental thing. And unfortunately, there's nothing that we could do to coach him out of that. You know, that's something he's got to figure out on his own. I hope he comes good, but I honestly, I do see him leaving, whether it's within the next week or... All right, not even week. We got like 4 days left of the window, huh?
Yeah, it's like...
Today's the 27th.
Four days.
Wow.
Friday, it shuts, yeah. Friday.
So there's no way Piontek leaves then, because we don't have a backup lined up. I mean, a replacement. There's no way. So neither of these guys are leaving. They're staying until at least the summer, but I don't foresee them staying after that.
I'm just reading something here. We're recording this while Di Marzio's going on, and I'm just reading that according to Sky... Lega Calcio have rejected Milan's wishes to play tomorrow with a black armband on, which is weird. I don't know why they would do that. Normally they reject stuff like that if it's a controversial or like political figure who is being marked with the black. I don't know. I don't know what that's about, but I'm sure more will come out with that. They really aren't helping themselves though, Lega Calcio at the moment.
No,
with everything.
Yeah, they find a way to make themselves look worse in most situations.
Says that Donnarumma contract renewal negotiations are penciled in for February, which is good news. Now, talk about this now because he's been absolutely exceptional.
Most clean sheets in the league?
Yeah, since probably the start of December, I would say. I think he's kept 7 clean sheets out of 8 now, is it? Or 7 out of 9, I think it might be.
He's got 8 total, and yeah, at least 4 in the last 5.
Yeah.
Because this year we've only conceded in one game.
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. He's doing incredibly well, and this has always been my thing with Donnarumma. People criticize the mistakes that he makes, and he does occasionally make some errors of judgment, although I refuse to believe that most are as fatal as people say they are. For example, the one against Udinese, yes, he came rushing out way off his line, but first of all, incredible shot by Larsson, and also there were 2 defenders between the ball and the goal, and they both just sort of watched the ball curve around them and into the net. But anyway, by the by, he saves us more points than he costs us. That's the bottom line. He is getting paid handsomely, like a lot more than anybody else on the team, Bealey aside, but he's going. You know, there's no way that he's staying beyond June. I've always been really, really worried about what the future holds because he's playing so well and he's so young, meaning he will have so many admirers around Europe that there's no way that Milan are going to get what they want or Elliot are going to get what they want in negotiating his salary downwards. Yeah. I mean, that's just not going to happen. That's a stupid thing to even suggest. If you can't at least offer him the same terms, then don't even come to the negotiating table because it's downright insulting to Donnarumma, even after everything that's happened before with Raiola. But Raiola's going to be asking for a pay rise. Forget staying at the same. You know, he's going to be asking for a pay rise because if not, Real Madrid will pay him 10 million a year. It's as simple as that. And I'm worried about how those talks are going to go. But the good news is that there is at least a willingness to sit down and talk. We need to lock down our key assets. And I think that's a good thing. You know, if we can stay on good terms with Raiola, I think that's ideal.
And I think we are. I think we're in his good graces now. He's obviously been on the out and out with Mirabelli and the previous regime. And then with Leonardo, I don't remember. Did they get along well? I feel like they did, right?
Yeah, they got along better. Yeah.
Yeah, and it just seems like they're continuing to get better. I mean, we're signing more of his clients, or more of our players are becoming his clients. So I think we're in good graces with him. I think we got a good deal with the Zlatan deal, and so that might bounce back into a plus for Donnarumma, which is well deserved. Like you said, everything about him. Obviously, he's performing well. Most clean sheets in the league. He's young. He's 20 years old. But on top of all that, he has 5 years of top flight starting experience. You know, you don't get that in a 20-year-old anywhere, any position, any league. It doesn't happen. So to say he's not the most attractive goalkeeper for top clubs right now would be just a lie. You know, he is. And we need to do everything we can to keep him. Hopefully with these negotiation talks, like maybe, I mean, obviously the club knows more than we do. Maybe this takeover is a lot closer to being done than we know. So with that, they might be willing to, you know, up that contract, or maybe it's a stipulation that we're not losing Donnarumma for them to take over. Who knows? There's all kinds of things, but I'm very confident we get the deal done, whatever it is. But I think he absolutely gets a raise.
Yeah, 100%. I think most of this will depend on, I mean, you've seen the comments from Raiola on Friday night, because he was actually at the Brescia game. He basically fired a warning and said, you know, I'm still waiting for the apology from the Milan fans who insulted me because I didn't want him to sign under Fassoni and Mirabelli. He didn't like the project. He thought it was unsustainable. I mean, I won't say that he was proven entirely right, but he kind of had a point in that he didn't really like what was going on with the whole ownership, etc. Ultimately, Donnarumma did end up re-signing under Mirabelli and Fassoni's leadership, I guess you would say.
But didn't Raiola get zero agent fees on that?
Yeah, Mirabelli said he never paid him a penny, which he seemed really proud about. But really, they kind of bent us over a barrel with that, because we had to sign his brother, and also he got a pay rise to $6 million a year, which made him instantly by far the highest paid player on our team.
Yeah.
So we did what we had to do then. You know, I'm surprised actually looking back that the time he has signed a renewal was with those guys at the helm. But we'll see what happens. I think, again, it's going to be us relying on Donnarumma's will to stay here. And I think it's going to rely on us pitching a project to Raiola that he can at least... And this isn't just important with Donnarumma. It's important because he controls so many clients now that are here at Milan. Obviously, Romagnoli is now Raiola. And
yeah.
I think you consider those two like the main young core that we have. So it's really important that we manage to persuade him that we've got something going on here. Otherwise, both could be gone and playing Champions League football, which you could argue they do deserve. You know, they're not going to wait around forever.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more years that go by that we don't get Champions League football, they're going to grow irritated. You know, they're stars and they deserve to be playing at the top level. And if they're not getting that here, you know, it's not like they haven't tried and done their best with us. Like, at what point is it okay to say, look, I did what I came here to do and we didn't get to the level. I want to move on. I want a team that can. And I wouldn't hold it against either of them if they chose to leave, to be honest with you. But obviously, I don't want that. But I think we have pitched a project that Raiola believes in. And I think the Zlatan signing was proof of that. There was a lot of back and forth in that one that went on longer than most people anticipated it would. So I think there absolutely was something there that said, like, look, this is happening. This is how we're going to move forward. And that's the only way that I think Zlatan would have agreed to it.
Yeah, and what you said as well about the ownership situation of the club. I mean, Raiola was quick to take a pop at Elliot, saying that this probably isn't the Milan that Boban and Maldini had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a dig at the owners as if they were sort of separate entities, which they are, but then maybe saying that the owners are holding back what they want to do. But then if he is willing to sit down for talks, does that mean that that situation may be changing? And that he puts trust in Boban and Maldini, who might stay around under a new ownership, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You can read between the lines of any comments that Raiola makes. But I thought that was interesting that he sort of took Boban and Maldini's side on that and said that this isn't the Milan that they want.
Well, I think it's safe to assume that he would have some inside information as far as the takeover is concerned. I mean, it's the likelihood of most his clients. He obviously would have to have some knowledge.
I remember the journalist who came out and said something about that's why Ibrahimovic signed essentially for the 18-month deal, was that, you know, he has knowledge that this takeover is going to happen and that they want to become instantly competitive, which is good. But then also you figure someone who knows what this club is all about, having them there as, let's say, almost an intermediary to sort of like assist the transition and stuff would be absolutely key. You don't just sign Ibrahimovic as someone to play 90 minutes every Sunday. It's everything that comes with it. He's the brand. Mm-hmm. He is the personality. And it just makes you wonder if there is something a little bit more at play. Win against Brescia. We were up into the top six for a bit. And just to clear something up, there's loads of different versions of the league table going around. Like some that have us in eighth, some that have us in sixth, and all that kind of stuff. Some that go on goal difference, some that... The way it works is that the head-to-head record only counts once the two teams have played each other twice. So essentially, if we lost to Udinese 1-0, right? And then we beat them 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, we each won a game won by a one goal margin, but we scored. No, I don't know. How would that work?
No, that just goes straight to head. That goes to goal difference for that.
Right,
too.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because so, it just counts win and draw and loss.
So it might be the case that, say, the next time we play Parma at home and we're 3 points behind them, and then we beat them again to go level on points with them, we've got the head to head, we would go above them. At the moment, we are currently eighth, right? Mm-hmm.
Technically eighth, but we've beaten seventh and sixth already.
Mm-hmm.
And we're tied on
but
points.
That doesn't come in until we play them again, and assuming that we don't lose to them, basically. That's... I didn't clear that up as cleanly as I wanted to, but that is basically how it works.
Yeah, and a draw would still put us above them because we have that one win, so...
Yeah. So I feel like we're essentially sixth now until Cagliari or Parma beat us. They might both beat us at San Siro, I don't know. But that's a nice morale booster anyway. And now we've got a cup quarterfinal Tuesday night at San Siro under the lights. Should be good. Over 30,000 are expected for it, which I don't think is too bad. I mean, you got to remember, without sounding too arrogant, this is a competition where our record is like absolutely ridiculous. We've qualified for the quarterfinals at least for the last 11 seasons now. We've got to the semi-finals in three out of the last four. We got to the final twice in the last 4 years. So we've got a really good chance here to make it four out of five in terms of semi-final qualification.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens. I also wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't. You know, just looking at the bigger picture right now, everyone else that's in the cup as far as into the semis, with the exception of obviously Torino at the moment, is already going to qualify for Europe. We know that to be a fact. It's Inter, it's Lazio, it's... Was it Lazio? Yeah. No. It was Napoli, right? Napoli won?
Lazio won last season.
Did... No, you're right. They won last season. I was talking about this year in the quarter or in the semis. We would play the Inter if
we go through. Sorry, it was the top four teams from last year.
Yeah.
So it's Juve, Atalanta, Inter, and Napoli.
Yeah. So, I mean, all of them, with the exception of Napoli, are almost guaranteed to be in European football next year. So that basically makes seventh place a Europa League spot. Is it worth it to try to make a cup run that we're probably not going to win against Inter or Juve? Or is it worth fighting in the league harder and knowing that we have that extra position to secure Europe in? I don't know if it's worth it or not, but they're professionals. They're going to play. They're going to want to win regardless. But I don't think it's a critical game. You know, if we crash out, it may have a silver lining. That was the point I was trying to make.
I understand that. I mean, it's similar to all the headlines at the moment over here in the English media about fixture congestion and juggling cup competitions and all that kind of thing. It's different in Italy because it's like the league. Some are in the Europa League, Champions League, whatever, and the Coppa Italia, that's pretty much it. And the fact that the quote-unquote bigger teams don't come into it until later in the tournament anyway helps, you know, not playing our first game in it until January. And we've had a home game against Spal, and now we've got a home game against Torino, which, if played out in simulation style, would probably be a home win. So it's almost like a straightforward passage, perhaps, to the semi-finals. So I'm in two minds the same as you about this. I think if we were to lose, it would allow us to absolutely pile everything into this second half of the season. And if we're serious about chopping that 8-point gap and making it, you know, making it 6 points, making it 4 points, and just really piling on the pressure, it could be good for that. Especially considering the difference makers in the squad, you know, like your Ibrahimovic is older, could do with the rest in their legs without a doubt, and not worrying about the later end of a tournament that, like you say, we're probably unlikely to win. At the same time, are we unlikely to win it? You know, we've got to the final on a couple of occasions. Both times we've been unfortunate to play Juve. We can't play Juve this time. We'd have to play them in the semis. So that's,
no, we'd play Inter in the semis this year because they've already secured their spot. Yeah. So that's why I'm kind of against it, because I just point and simple think Inter is a better squad right now, and I'd rather not play them four times this season.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'd rather not lose to Inter in the cup.
Yeah.
That would just be horrible. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we would. And then Juve on their side have Atalanta, and then the winner of Roma or Fiorentina. So see how that goes. But I'm all for us winning a trophy that I think is potentially attainable. And the cup at the moment is like all we have to go at, pretty much.
Right.
It would be cool to have the cup winners patch on next season's jerseys, like you know, and to win the first trophy since 2016. But I don't know. Pioli knows best. I think we win tomorrow, probably.
Yeah.
And now the idea of a semi against Inter has me kind of nervous.
It's terrible because the semi's a two-legged tie. So even if we get thrashed, you know, 5-0 or something in the first leg, we got to do it again.
Yeah.
On top
of
the fact that we play them in 2 weeks' time already, you know, and we got embarrassed in the first leg. Like, it's not
it
a team
cool,
I want to be.
It would be cool, though. Like, you know, they've beaten us in the league, and obviously it's their home game next in the league. Right. They could do the double over us, But then it would be kind of cool if they didn't go on and win the league and we beat them in the cup and we went on and won the cup. That would be like us having the upper hand for the season. Yeah.
That would be cool. I don't think it'll happen, but it would be cool.
No. Anyway, lineup for Torino. Who you got? How many changes are you making?
Excuse me. I think there's gonna be...
Sorry, I'm boring you, mate.
I've had a long day, man. I went to the gym and then I didn't take a nap after, and then I got a haircut and doing this. I didn't do much, but I don't know.
So, all right,
I went out last night. That's what it was. I didn't get home till like 2 o'clock in the morning, and then woke up early. It doesn't matter. Anyways, lineup changes. I think we're gonna see Begovic start. I think that'll be cool. Give him a debut. I think Conte, because Calabria is still injured, so I think Musacchio is gonna come back in, recovering from injury. Give Simon a rest, and then Romagnoli, Teo, they're gonna stay. I don't see why they wouldn't. We heard that stat about Romagnoli, so he's definitely gonna play from the start. Midfield, probably the same thing. Castillo. Is Benacer's not suspended? He's suspended for the Hayes game.
Suspended for the league, yeah. They don't carry over into the cup.
Yeah, so I think he'll still play. And then the left mid position, that's the one I'm not too sure if it'll probably be Çalhanoğlu. But then I think it's going to be Piątek and Rebic up top.
Let me just quickly look at the list. Milan news lineup. I think Begovic starts in goal as well. Although they've got Donnarumma starting in goal. Gigio as well, not Antonio. We've got to keep Antonio's like faultless record intact now. You know, he's going to get into the Hall of Fame at the moment, so keep it like that. I'd like to see Begovic start, without a doubt. Conte, definitely, because Calabria is unfit, as you say. They've got Musacchio coming in for Simon. I got told in midweek how to pronounce his name, and I've completely gone blank. But anyway, Simon, he's 30. He's been thrown in pretty much since he arrived, so I think it'd be good to just give him a full week. Yeah. So throw Musacchio in there if he's recovered, because he needs to get back up to game speed as well. So I think that's the perfect time to do it. Romagnoli, Teo, definitely. Probably Samu starts on the right because Suso's going and we don't yet have his replacement in. Be interesting to see what happens there. Krunic, I would say, will probably come in. Not certain on that because might want the physicality in midfield. Benacer, because he's missing the weekend so he can get his rest then. I'm going to say Bonaventura over Çalhanoğlu, but wouldn't surprise me if Hakan plays to get sort of more up to game speed as well. And then Rebic and Piątek, and it might be Piontek's last game for us. Since Spurs and Chelsea and sniffing around, apparently.
I just don't see it happening. Has Giroud signed for sure with Inter?
No, not for sure, I don't think. But
because if we did a swap, if it was like if it was Giroud and Cash for Piątek, I could see that. Because then we instantly have that backup striker. And Giroud is the best super sub striker in the world, I think. He's fantastic off the bench. So I don't think that's a bad move at all. But I don't foresee that happening. I think he goes to Inter.
Yeah, I do as well. The Piątek swap thing with Spurs was interesting. Who was it? I can't remember.
Juan Foyth, Victor Wanyama, and Eric Lamella.
Yeah, and then...
and Cash.
And then it sort of came out that Lamella was something that was suggested by Massara when he found out that Spurs weren't going to pay the 30 mil. So perhaps that does mean there is an interest in our part on Lamella. He is a natural wide midfielder, so he could be Suso's replacement.
And I would love him. He's got league experience. He was great at Roma before he went to Spurs. I think he'd be fantastic.
I like him. I like it more as a name than Cengiz Under.
Yeah.
And definitely Adnan Januzaj. Those are weird rumors. Like, Januzaj hasn't really set the world alight at Sociedad at all. Yeah, no. there was rumors I read about Barcelona and Real Madrid being interested in him. Is he one of those players that's really, really skillful and his stats don't quite show how good he is? But I've not seen enough of him to make a judgment. I just don't like the... What I saw of him at United, he's not sort of your typical winger. He's very sort of lanky and quite... He looks a bit lackluster sometimes, but got a special appearance there from Chuck.
Yeah, it's Chuck the Milan pup.
Nice. And who else were we linked with? Yannick Carrasco would be an interesting one because he was really good playing as a right midfielder for Atletico, but his salary is just obscene. And I know he says he wants to take a pick.
I'm worried that he would bring coronavirus into the club.
Correct, yeah. Quarantine him, without a doubt, you know.
Yeah.
Lock him in La Madonina.
Give him a month off or something.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Yeah, 100%. But I don't know. Interesting. There's a lot going on with the market at the moment.
Weird because there is, but I feel like there isn't at the same time. You know, like, I feel like there's a lot of murmurs, but not a lot of action. And that's obviously like an outside looking in perspective, but I just don't foresee much getting done anymore outside of what we've already done. You know, I think there might be departures, but the ones that are left to leave, Piątek, Suso, and Paqueta, I don't think any of them can leave unless we get a replacement. And I just don't know if we have anything true lined up. Unless something like, I think so. Yeah, it'd be Suso on an 18-month with obligation to buy loan, right? To
it would be an option that turns into an obligation based on goals or appearances.
I thought it was appearances. Like Milan wanted 8, they wanted 15 or something like that.
Actually, that means between now and the end of the season, not in the full 18 months.
Right, yeah. Yeah, which makes the most sense because it'd be half season. So the only way I could see it is if it's like multiple deals to replace each other. Like Piątek goes to Spurs for Lamela and cash. Lamela comes here. Now we have that right mid. So we get rid of Suso. But then it's like, who do we bring in as that striker? Do we switch to a 4-3-3 again? And then we just have Rebic and Liao and Zlatan?
What I hope is that we have a load of dominoes lined up. And then whichever one sort of moves first. Mm-hmm. You know,
Do you think it would be Petagna? Do you think that's like lined up? Because that's gone quiet.
I really don't like the suggestion that was heard. Again, I should remember the source, but I can't. Saying that we're not bothered about signing another striker because we think Rebic and possibly Castillejo could play there if needed. And it's like, all right, but we definitely need another winger then. Surely they're not thinking of playing Calabria right back and Conte as a wide midfielder. Maybe it could work. I don't know, but it seems to me like if we're going to sell anyone, and we're going to get cash for him, we need to have replacements in now.
Yeah,
you know, it'd be utterly pointless to sort of blow up our squad, regardless of what you think of how important Piątek, Suso, and Paqueta are, and not bring anyone else in. It's diminishing depth, and if we are serious about having a run at the top four, like the players are saying, like Pioli keeps saying, then that wouldn't be the way to do it, you know? I would be incredibly surprised if we saw all three of those that I mentioned leave and we get three replacements in. That doesn't seem to me like six deals could be pulled off in the remaining 4 days of the window. You know, it'd be incredible. Yeah, we got Kjaer. Fuck it, I'll just go for it. Kjaer and Begovic over the line in the space of about 24 hours. But this is different. You know, there's all kinds of weird formulas at play. I do think we'll sign Florentino Luis, though.
You think that'll happen?
Yeah, because he's not being used by Benfica. Yeah. They have no real reason to hang on to him. That maybe should worry us, but I have been informed, because I know nothing about Benfica really, that they've signed Julian Weigl, and basically now he's just taken the spot of defensive midfield, and that's that. And so he should, because he's a really, really good player. I'm surprised that he went there, actually, because he was getting game time for Dortmund, but they seem to now be focusing on Emre Can, which is a strange one. But yeah, I think we'll sign him. You know, I think he wants the move by the sounds of it. Agent has been in constant talks. We're actually making offers, which is good. But I would like it to be a loan with an option, not a loan with obligation, because he's a young kid. The likelihood is that he will come and struggle to start with. That's likelihood.
That's realistic,
But also, I have heard good things as well. Maybe we should be worried that Benfica, a team that puts so much emphasis on their academy, aren't giving him any playing time, essentially, or haven't done given him much playing time this season. I think he's played twice this season. I don't know. I see it getting over the line, and I'm willing to give Maldini and Boban the benefit of the doubt on this, because I don't know. Something about it to me feels like the Teo thing. Not positionally, but just sort of like a young player on the fringes who we've sort of plucked out of nowhere. It's not like loads of different teams are, although apparently Man United and Roma are also looking at Florentino Luis, but it's not like there's a massive bidding war for him. We've like, yeah, that's our guy. We're going to offer 40 mil, 30 mil, 40 mil for him. That to me just gives me more confidence for some reason, as if we're really backing ourselves to have uncovered a gem. But we'll see what happens. I think that'll get over the line. I think the one position that we're desperately trying to reinforce is central midfield. Yeah. Without a doubt, because
and I think it's what we need to do the most.
Yeah, we've got Benacer, Kessier, and arguably Krunic, who can just play as a centre mid. But in terms of the others, Paqueta can't really, in my opinion. Bonaventura, definitely more attacking minded from that role. Calhanoglu could potentially slot in, but again, more of an attacking minded midfielder. So we need someone who can sit a bit deeper and be an anchor, in my opinion. That's it, really. I don't know if there's any more rumors that are knocking about.
I think that kind of summed them all up. Did we have any more questions? I didn't get a chance to look yet.
Yeah, well, we got a couple along the similar lines. One from Bart Ziallo, who says, do you think Milan will make a big move in this window, or will we have to settle with what we have now? We kind of discussed it, but in terms of a big move, it depends if you would consider Florentino a big move. I think the days are gone of us having the Mr. X, you know, the guy who we're negotiating with under wraps, and then it all comes out in the last day. I don't think any deals get done like that anymore. There's always an insider knocking around somewhere who knows something about it.
Yeah.
In terms of settling with what we have, there's definitely got to be an element of that. You know, we are working under financial fair play constraints still.
Right.
Can't go out and who's the big, I don't know. You know, there were rumors that we were in the Haaland race. You know, the Erling Haaland thing, yeah. And he's going to Dortmund and smashing it already. But we don't really have the financial capabilities to compete with these teams who are putting sort of like 40 million euro contracts spread over 4 years down on the table. We just can't compete with that.
Yeah,
it's not happening. No. And Christian Espinoza asks, let's say Milan are selling one more player and bringing in one more player. Who would be your dream signing and who do you think they'll actually sign? I mean, position for position, like I say, I would sell Paqueta. I just see him, as I say, as a bit of a dead asset to us at the moment. Like, I don't see how he reintegrates into the fold after this, especially with this formation. Like, I've seen some things suggesting that if Suso isn't sold, we will try to make him into a right midfielder and try get some use out of him between now and the end of the season, which makes sense. No point letting him rot on the bench and his asset value depreciate so much.
Yeah.
But with Paqueta, I don't see how we crowbar him into any role, and his head's already not in the right place. And I really do hope that, you know, everything is okay with that and he does get into a good mindset as soon as possible. But I would say sell him and sign an actual central midfielder. I mean, my dream signing for this window has always been Arturo Vidal. Like, if the rumours are true and he's not happy at Barca, Inter seem to have kind of moved on now and they're just focusing on tying up the Eriksen deal, which I think they've done.
Yeah, he was in Milano today.
Yeah, then, you know, go for someone like that. I'll go for a Rakitic, or go for... I mean, Tonali, a lot of people calling for Tonali, you know, to just have a late bid, I'll see if we can tempt Brescia to sell, but I don't think they will again. I think they'll wait until the summer now.
Yeah.
It's always difficult as the days tick by, basically.
It is.
It gets very hard to do business in blind panic.
Yeah, you know, I think fans got really used to, with Galliani, every deadline day we had a signing, no matter how small. We always had one. And that just hasn't been the case in the last few seasons, you know? And I think people haven't quite left that mentality yet. So I really, maybe Florentino Luis gets done. Maybe one of the Spurs players comes if we do that swap deal. But I don't foresee any big names. I think you're right with Paqueta being kind of a dead asset at this point. I think that's the guy that you got to make sure you get rid of at this point. Suso, you could try him as a right mid, but I think... We tried him as an attacking midfielder. It failed. We know he's got one thing that he's good at, and he hasn't been good at it this season. So I don't foresee a reason to try and adapt him. But at the same time, if he stays, you know, you can't just leave him on the bench, like you said. So I go back and forth with it. Paqueta's probably, unfortunately, the one that has to leave the most. And as far as bringing him in, I think Florentino Luis is the guy who we will bring in. And maybe that's all that hinges on that deal, you know, is getting Paquette out the door. Who knows?
Mm. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I'd be interested to see under what terms Paquette leaves as well. Be it us completely cutting ties and letting him go to PSG or wherever in a 25 mil deal or something like that, accepting just our money back in terms of the balance sheets and stuff like that, or whether we just loan him somewhere and say, look, go get your head straight, get playing football, come back here, and then we'll give you another shot, basically. Be interesting to see what happens there. In terms of the others, it's going to be difficult. I remember Suso playing a fair bit on as the right midfielder in Mihailovic's 4-4-2.
Mm-hmm.
But then also he kept getting swapped with Honda, so it was kind of a mess at that point. I don't know. And Piontek is the one that is the most unnecessary to sell, but the one that we can live with not selling the most.
Yeah.
Because he definitely gets game time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. And then just quickly, I've just realized we won't actually record again before the game against Hayes Verona on Sunday.
Yeah.
They're doing all right.
People are listening to this, the Torino game will be over too.
It will. Like, give us your prediction quickly for the Torino game.
2-1 us.
I think I went 2-1 as well in the prediction. I think Rebic scores again. I've just got this weird feeling that he's going to go on a bit of scoring. Right now. Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's absolutely unplayable and he's doing anything extraordinary that defenders can't cope with, but it's just, when you look in, it's in.
You know, and even when he played and was doing poorly, he was always in good positions. Mm. It was just either that final touch or the decision-making or the shooting or, you know, that extra bit that would have sealed the deal that was missing, you know? And I've seen it on Twitter a lot. You know, a lot of people said, like, yeah, he may be struggling, but his position's there. He's getting in the right spot. He's making the right runs. And we're finally seeing the fruit of his labor. So I wouldn't be surprised if that form continues and that hot streak just grows, you know?
And I hope so as well. I hope so. Yeah. I really like the interview that he gave after he scored twice against Udinese, where he just said, look, I've kept my head down. kept my head down, kept working. Just trying to prove my worth and that I deserve a place in this team. And that he was happy to score twice, but he's a professional. He just gets on with it. And, you know, respect for that. It's like so many players that we've had that have been pushed to the fringes and have just kind of gotten on with it. You know, Ricardo Rodriguez hasn't really said anything bad in the press. Barini has always been, Rebic may end up falling under that category as someone who just, even when things work great, he got on with it. So I said Verona, we're having a good season. They're 2 points behind us and in theory one place. They've got a game in hand as well, although that game in hand is against Lazio, so take it with a pinch of salt. They're having a very good season. They've actually scored 3 more goals than us this season and they've conceded 4 less. So they're doing all right. So this isn't going to be an easy game. We've already beaten them once this season, but...
Yeah, I'm going to actually say the opposite of that. I think it is going to be an easy game. I think the start of our season just paints a bad picture for all stat comparisons. You know, those first 7 games under Gianpaolo and the first few games under Pioli that was that hard run of games, I think it paints everything really poorly. You take those games out and I bet our stats are better than Ahea's, you know, over the last 5-6 games or whatever. And when they're in Serie A, which seems to be every other year, which alone right there should tell you the type of team that they are, but they're obviously having a better year than normal. I just don't think they have anything that's really, really going to get the job done for them. I think their time is to fall off is starting, and we're going to see that. You know, they're going to lose to us. We're going to get that 3-point lead on them, and then they're going to lose to Lazio, and then we're really going to solidify that lead. So, I'm not too worried about them. We're going to crush them 3-0.
Oof. That's bold. I like your confidence. I just noticed here, Hellas Verona's next 3 are Milan away, Lazio away, and Juve at home. So this may be the start of their tail off. That being said, they've won 3 out of the last 4, and they've done so conceding just 2 goals. So not bad that, you know, they're in a similar kind of run of confidence and run of not conceding goals. Before that run, they kind of showed their frailties a bit. They lost to Inter, they lost to Roma, lost to Atalanta. So perhaps it just shows that they're doing what they should. You know, they're beating the teams that they should be competitive against. The wins were against Spal, Genoa and Lecce. So, you know, maybe it does show that they are kind of where they are. And I hope you're right on that. But fair play to them. They're doing all right. I don't know. For some reason, I can't find myself hating these. I know they've got dodgy fans and what have you, but I think it's because so many Milan players end up there, or ex-Milan players. Barini's gone there, obviously. Pazzini's there.
Oh, you know what? It's going to be 3-1. Barini's going to score against us.
3-2. Pazzini scores as well. Matteo Pessina's there. You remember Salvatore Bacchetti? That centre-back that we signed on loan from Spartak Moscow?
That was Inzaghi's year, right?
That was a strange season.
That was a strange signing. That was weird.
Yeah, very. They've got some good players, though. I know that Sofyan Amrabat's meant to be really good. And they've got Kumbula, who we've apparently scouted. He came through their youth academy. I don't know. It might be a tough one, this. It might be a tough one if they come and try and frustrate us. And teams that tend to come and do that often will succeed for large parts of the game. So for that reason, I'll say that we win 2-1. And I agree, Barini scores. And he gets a clap. He gets an ovation from the crowd.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, two more wins. Let's wait and see. And then next week will be the pre-derby pod, which should be interesting.
Pre-derby. We'll have, do we have our guest confirmed? I don't want to name drop yet if we don't.
Not confirmed, but hopefully we'll have a guest on for that. Doing a little bit of a preview from the opposition point of view. So we'll definitely slap an 18-plus rating on that. So it'll be a few choice words flying about, no doubt. Fingers crossed we're going into that with a little bit of momentum, like we've had
six
recently.
Six straight wins. I said it last week, we're going in with six straight wins, and now we've got four of the six done, so why not?
I mean, what, you know, you put the contract down on the table for Pioli. How many years are you putting on it? I'm putting 10. Keep him here for 10 years.
If he beats Inter, yeah, sure. If he makes us seven straight wins, then yeah, give him whatever he wants.
It's like Rio Ferdinand thing when Man United beat PSG. He's fantastic that way.
Oh, he's at the wheel.
Give him the contract. Yeah. Let him write whatever numbers he wants on it. That's going to be us if we beat Inter with Pioli. That's it though, really. I don't know. Any closing thoughts? Hope Maddie's car's all right. That's why he's
Yeah, we didn't even say why he wasn't here. Yeah, his car broke down. I don't know. He can't afford a nice car or something.
I mean, he lives in the Motor City.
He does live in the Motor City,
and he can't hold down a decent car. So,
I don't know. And on that note,
that's pretty much it. Thank you for listening, everyone. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. Being joined by all reliable Anthony Togrew.
It's been a lot of fun. You can find me on Twitter at Torgard45.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone. We will catch you in a week's time.
Patrick, mettila in mezzo, Patrick. Palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Alessio! Il gol del capitano ancora! Ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino, detto ieri in conferenza.